Guys, we're here with Aaron Moss. About a week and a half ago in Earlander, Kentucky, he approached me on a break and told me a story that was relative to the training that he received from Sergeant Kenny Williams, who runs our interdiction mastermind program. And it was such a good story. Unfortunately, at the time that he told it to me, we were not recording. The camera was being switched out for memory cards. And I thought, man, this is one of the best stories I've ever heard in my life. And I was disheartened to find out that the camera had been turned off for the moment, which we don't usually do. And I was thankful enough to reach back out to Aaron. He agreed to come on here and give us his explanation of what had occurred and the training that he took. So everybody, we can welcome Aaron Moss to our podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
So what happened? Tell me about, you took Kenny's class. Where'd you take it?
Beginning of December up in Indiana.
Okay. And tell me about what you had going on prior to that, what you saw differently, and the story that essentially you're going to explain here, and why it was so important for me to get you back on here to tell that story again. So go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I was the guy that you talk about before taking that class. I sit out there, ran every plate I saw, ran some radar, looking for the speeders and all that. Really didn't have an idea of what I was looking for. Took his class and it opened my eyes. I took a bunch of notes. I went through the PowerPoint when she sent it back. And when I came back home, I did everything that he was saying. I switched up my tactics. I started sitting in the medium with my light shining across, watching driver reactions, you know, not looking at license plates, not worrying about speed, just solely looking at the passengers in the cars that were going by. I work night shift, so it's kind of difficult to see. So I was using binoculars. I'd watch an approach. This was roughly 2 weeks after I took his class. I was sitting on a highway. We got a 4-lane highway that goes right through our town. This was late at night. Saw a car approaching me, saw the headlights. I was looking through my binoculars, noticed that they were traveling in the left lane, the fast lane. As they approached me and saw me, they switched lanes, got over to the slow lane. As they were passing by, female driver, kind of leaned back in her seat, tried to hide her face behind the B post, kind of threw her left arm up, trying to keep her face from being seen and look straight ahead. And then I noticed as they passed, she switched back over to the left lane. She's the only car out there, not really understanding why she's doing all the lane changes. So I pulled out, started following her, got behind her within 10 seconds. I noticed that she was going from fog line to center line over and over. She noticed I was behind her, so she switched lanes again. Didn't use a turn signal. I decided to do the traffic stop right there. Walked up to the van, and right from the start, I kind of got a vibe that something wasn't right. Doing a female driver, there's a child in the passenger seat, another child in the back seat, and then another adult female in the back. So right from the start, kind of threw up flags why both adults weren't sitting up front and the kids in the back like it normally is. Started talking to her, asking her for her ID and all that stuff. Could smell odor of marijuana, but didn't really tell her right off the bat. Kind of played it cool, walked her through the steps, kind of got her story, asked her where she was coming from, going to, checked her ID and all that, and then had her step out of the vehicle. Separated her from the people inside, got her story, asked her about why there was smell of weed. And she first told me that there was a random guy that she had picked up at a truck stop and dropped off at another truck stop, and he'd had some weed on him. Didn't know the guy's name, didn't know where she'd picked him up at, didn't know where she dropped him off at. So kept talking to her, and she finally said, oh, you know, I forgot. He handed me this small bag of marijuana. It's in my pocket. Let me get it out and hand it to you. I totally forgot he gave it to me. So she hands it over. I feel like she's impaired, so we go ahead and do field sobriety. She admitted at that point that she had stopped at a truck stop and had actually been, she used fentanyl at the truck stop prior to driving. So we did a vehicle search. At that night, it's probably one of the coldest nights we've had in Kentucky. So I had a couple more units come. So when we search the vehicle, we can get the kids out somewhere warm so they're not standing out in the elements. The other adult female, I separate her, kind of ask her what was going on. Her story was completely different. They were traveling from Indianapolis down to Southern Kentucky to meet with her boyfriend. She didn't know her boyfriend's name, didn't know what town he was in, didn't exactly know an address where they were going to. They were just going south. She consented to search her stuff, searched her belongings, didn't find anything. So we placed her in the back of one of the cars, and then she had the kids in there with her in the back of the police car. Continue with the driver, and she didn't do so good on the field sobriety. I ended up finding some a white substance in her purse, and she told me it was fentanyl. And then she had numerous, I'd say 15 or 20 uncapped syringes all throughout the van, and a tourniquet, a rubber tourniquet laying right there in the driver's seat. There was probably three or four needles that were in inches of where the front seat child was sitting. So we wrap up the stop. We take the driver down to the PD for booking. At that point, we didn't have anything on the backseat passenger. You know, the stories weren't lining up, but criminally, we didn't have anything. So one of the other officers took down to the gas station that was open, and she was going to wait for a ride. When we got back to the police station, one of the kids walked up and handed over a piece of toilet paper and was like, "Hey, before you guys searched her, she handed me this piece of toilet paper, told me not to look in it and not to worry about it because the police won't search a kid." Unwrapped the toilet paper, and it was a loaded syringe that had what appeared to be meth inside of it. Officer went back to the gas station, picked her up, and brought her back in. At that point, we really didn't have any idea exactly what was going on. The kids were starting to wake up when I first made the stop. So once we got to the station, we could actually start talking to them, and we dug deeper into the story. Basically found out that they were all from Indianapolis area, and the female driver was not related to them. She was at one point dating their father, who's incarcerated. All they knew was they were supposed to be getting picked up and dropped off at a friend's house there in Indianapolis. They'd fallen asleep. They woke up when I made the stop. They had no idea where they were at. So we got in contact with child services here in Kentucky. They got a hold of grandma up in Indiana, who actually has custody. She came down. Through the course of the investigation, Kentucky Child Services reached out to Indiana, and they did a joint investigation. While we were here at the PD, the kids actually said that they were scared the entire time. They had no idea where they were going. There were some comments that had been made at that time. The kids didn't really want to say the comments, but they did thank us multiple times for making the stop, which kind of let us know something else was going on. That night, the kids were released to the grandmother, and then they did the follow-up investigation. During the follow-up investigation, the kids were speaking to Indiana Child Services and actually came out and said that they were told that to stick to the story, they were being taken to Southern Kentucky. And once they got to Southern Kentucky, that they were going to be sold. Didn't know who they were going to be sold to, why they were being sold. They were just told, "Hey, you're getting in the vehicle, you're going down there, you're getting sold." I don't know much more details about that. I just know that our detective has been in contact with the feds, and they're looking into it now for the human trafficking standpoint. But, I mean, couldn't have happened at a better time after taking that training. And be completely honest with you, I can tell you right now, if I had not gone to that training, that wouldn't have happened, and I have no idea where those kids would be right now.
This is an interesting story. Even here, sitting, listening to it, getting emotional. I have four kids, so I'm getting emotional about it. But it goes back to the time of, in my mind, and not making this about me, of the things that I've put up with building this training company, the naysayers, the non-cops who pretend to be cops, who think training like this is unimportant, to the time where I tried to convince Kenny Williams to teach and how important it was and what his gift was and to share it with the world. And to then my mind goes into some of these states that are putting legislation in place to prevent from police doing their jobs under the guise of some stupidity to try to prevent our heroes from doing work. And if this is an example of why we do what we do, I don't know what is. I don't think it's more pure than this. So if you hadn't taken that training, and this is not a sales pitch, it's just an important thing to say that had Kentucky put legislation in effect, had your administration put the kibosh on you doing proactive work, had you not chosen to take Kenny's class, had Kenny not chosen to become an instructor with our company, had I not chosen to go against the grain and build something like this, the question is what would have happened to those kids? And how many more kids are out there that are waiting for a guy like Aaron Moss to come across and rescue them? And I just want to advocate that. And this is a gift for Kenny Williams. He didn't know the story. He hasn't been told it yet. I gave him a little hint that I would have given something good. I thought we had it. We would give it to him. I can't wait to finish this podcast episode and stop this, send it over to him and let him give a listen, because I, you know, sometimes we are even out of perspective at times of how important our tasks and our jobs are for what we're doing for the world. And dude, I can't congratulate you enough on a job that you could hang your whole fucking career on. You know what I mean? You could literally hang your whole career on doing this, and that was enough, right? You could go to, you could be diagnosed with a terminal disease and be comfortable knowing that you did something before you left this earth. My hat's off to you, dude. I mean, really, what a great, great job. And boy, oh boy, if you're addicted for when you first get your first large seizure or affordable seizure as a police officer, if this doesn't addict you, I don't know what does. What a great story to go out. And I want to, we have a lot of people listening to this podcast. I just want to continue to advocate to folks that this is far more important than writing a speeding summons. Just so we're clear, for those of you telling yourself that's all you can do, you're wrong. It is not a difficult thing to do. It takes a little skill, a little tenacity, and a lot of, I don't know, choosing and deciding this is the kind of police officer you're going to be. So, you know, Aaron, I don't know if you have anything else to add to that. I don't think there's much more that you have to add to that. It's a great story. It probably is to date the best story I've heard regarding this kind of police work thus far. I have other ones that are very important and near and dear to my heart. Cops not getting killed, cops not killing themselves because something we've done. That stuff is phenomenal as well. This is probably the best one that I've heard as a return on investment from the class and the teachings that we do. And, you know, I appreciate you taking the time, brother, here on this St. Patty's Day. Sorry, you got to go drink now.
I got to go to work.
Okay, yeah. So you'll be dealing with St. Patty's Day BS. Yeah. So it's a good time for police officers on St. Patty's Day to have to deal with all the BS that goes on with the large consumption of alcohol, followed up closely by the 4th of July is another fun day for the cops. Nothing like the 4th of July being a police officer. Anyway.
Man, I just want to say thank you for all you do. You've got a bunch of great instructors. I've taken a few of the classes. And like I said, it's changed my career. And as you were saying, it's the perfect investment. I mean, a couple $100 to go to that class, and it did that. So, I mean, to anybody out there who hasn't done it, or, I mean, if you got to spend the money out of your own pocket, it's well worth it. I mean, I can't thank you guys enough.
Yeah, well, thank you, Aaron, for taking the time to do this with us today. But without further ado, Aaron Morris, everybody, a great man in blue and law. I don't know if your uniform's blue, but you know what I mean, in law enforcement, and a gentleman who has committed his life to probably making what we consider a meager salary to go out and do God's work and rescue two children. I don't know what else to say, man. I feel like we're going to send you some stuff, and I'm not going to forget the story. You've changed my life. So I'll see you, brother. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that's it for the Street Cop Podcast. We will see you on the next episode.